Nayeli whispered. Boyfriends, husbands, babies, police, law and order, no bandidos. They sat there for 10 minutes, looking at the ground. Pin tenders, too, Yolo offered, because, you know, I am tired of working at the bowling alley. Maybe, you know, we could get one gay boy, Nayeli said, for Portacho. Yolo nodded wisely. Tacho needs love, too. We should take Tacho with us, Vampi cried. They turned to her with a bit of awe. It was the first really good idea La Vampi had ever had. The girlfriends had all seen Los Hermanos Blues at the Pedro Infante a few months earlier. We're on a mission from God, Nayeli intoned. La Vampi turned to her and said, I'm going. Nayeli cried, We can repopulate our town. We can save Mexico. It begins with us. It's the new revolution. She stood up. Isn't it time we got our men back in our own country? She was slipping into Aunt Irma campaign mode. She sat back down. Oh, my God, said Yolo. I can't believe I'm agreeing to this. They slapped hands. To the north, Nayeli said. Al norte, they replied. We have to tell the old woman, Nayeli said. La osa, cried Yolo. Are you crazy? She'll never allow us to do it. I think she will. No, she won't. She'll bite our heads off. No, Nayeli said. She stood up and brushed off her rear end. I think she will give us her blessing. She started to walk away, but stopped and turned back. We are going, she said, to bring back the Magnificent Seven. Late that same night, Irma was startled by a knock at her door. When she opened it, she was amazed to discover Garcia Garcia standing there with a suitcase. His left eye was black, and he had blood trickling from his nose. "What the hell happened to you?" she demanded. "They came to my house." "Who?" "Bandidos." "Bastards." "They threw me out." "No." "They took my house from me." She stood there in her tattered nightgown and curlers. "Can I sleep here?" he asked. Irma had only been in charge of the town for scant days, and already the troubles were starting. "Sleep in the back room," she said. He trudged in, forlorn and humiliated. "Hope you don't snore," La Osa added, and slammed her door. Chapter 8. Most of them were crammed into Irma's kitchen. The overflow stood in the street, with their faces jammed in Irma's television window. The priest and several concerned grandmothers stood in the living room. The eldest of them took up regal space on the flowered couch. Poor Garcia Garcia sulked in the backyard, trying to keep Irma's turkey away from him with one foot. Of course, Tacho had always wanted to go north, but he wasn't going to admit it. What was there for a man like him in Tres Camarones? Less than nothing. Maybe the girls. And there was no way he was going to let the girlfriends face the dangers or the excitement of going to El Norte without him. In his mind, they would cross the border under a stack of hay in an old truck, like the heroes in Nazi movies always escaped from occupied France. Some border patrol agent might poke the hay with a pitchfork, only to be called away by barking German shepherds just as the tines came perilously close. Maybe Yolo or Vampi would get poked in a thigh and would heroically bite back their yelps of pain. Not Nayeli. She was the leader of the commando unit. Tacho saw her in some kind of hot shorts with a red blouse tied under her breasts. There would be a close-up of the blood drops falling on the cobbles, but the impatient Border Patrol agents would wave them through, unseeing. In fact, their own boots would obliterate the telltale blood drops. And then he'd be there. La Jolla and its emerald beaches. Hollywood. Los Beverly Hills. Stars and nightclubs and haute couture. Tacho was ready. Aunt Irma had to promise to manage the daily operations of the Fallen Hand before Tacho would agree to go with the notorious girlfriends. Then came the tense negotiations between Irma and the mothers, grandmothers, and aunts. No one was willing to let her girl go into the maw of the appalling border. A long journey far from home, predatory men and Mexican police, bandits, injuries, car wrecks, kidnappings, slavers, pimps, drug pushers, illness, jails, Tijuana. The word alone speaking volumes about every border fear they held within them. Coyotes and smugglers, border patrol and minutemen, rapists, addicts, dogs, robots, demons, ghosts, serial killers, racists, army men, trucks, spotlights. Por Dios, they cried. These were just girls. Tacho helpfully informed them. I am not a girl, thank you very much. If God is with us, Nayeli pontificated, what harm can befall us? Tacho sipped his Nescafe instant and thought, how about crucifixion? Lions burning alive? He glanced at Irma. She wasn't moved by the religious propaganda either. But Father Francois stood at the back of the room and raised his hand over them in a benediction and said, Benditas sean. He looked at Tacho, who was irked that the girls got all the blessings. And you too, Francois amended. Tacho raised his cup. Amen. When I was on my master tour of the bowling alleys of the borderlands, Irma said, rising and stubbing her cigarette out in Tacho's coffee cup, representing all of you, representing our home, our fine city, I went alone. What horrors did I face, I ask you, what horrors? She made them jump when she bellowed, all of them. She leaned forward on her hands. Worse that I was convicted of one crime, being a woman. My efforts for the homeland were disparaged by your men and by you. Admit it, I fought with my bowling ball for all the women and the useless men of Camarones, and I did it alone, yes or no? They muttered, yes. Well, I was an illegal. Cries of shock, uproar, shouting. She held up her hands. I may have a passport now, but then I had no plans to cross that terrible wire. I was bowling in Mexico. But do you think for a minute that the call of athletics stops at some imaginary political boundary, eh? What of the Olympics? I was called to bowl in the United States for the honor of Mexico. Her audience reeled. They rocked in their seats. They thrilled. I went into Los Unaites. By God, I did. I was showing them all. Mexican womanhood. I stuck it in their faces. I bowled at the Bolero. I bowled at the Hillcrest. I bowled at the Aztec Lanes. This meant nothing to the gathered witnesses, but it sounded impressive. She could have been saying, I bowled at the White House. Maybe she had. The point was, Aunt Irma had been a champion in Gringolandia, too. And like these dear girls, I did it for you, you doubters. You should be ashamed. Go, Osa! Nayeli smiled at Tacho. She was incredible. Do you think I would send these warriors, these brave girls, and this fine heroic boy into the north with no help? No succor? Are you insane? Good God, you are insane! First, you ladies let yourselves be pushed around by your useless men for 100 years. Then you let those men escape. Now you deny the future to bold young women. You are not the new woman. You are shameful. She sat back down. She snapped her fingers. Get me some more coffee, she told Tacho. I'm not your maid, he said. But he got up and got it. Irma slurped it loudly and said, I went there. I bold Tijuana, you know? How do you think I got into the United States, Did I sprout wings and fly? I could have if I'd wanted to, but I didn't want to, no. I used my brain. Do you have brains? These girls have brains. Tacho, well, I don't know about Tacho. She continued, Do you think your little husbands, those whoremongers, were the first to leave Camarones? Do you remember the name? Chavarin? Chavarin. He looked like Gilbert Roland or Vicente Fernandez. He was their half-Basque fisherman. That mustache. Those two-tone shoes in shades of brown and cream. Shoes that allowed him to glide across dance floors like a sweet outpouring of syrup. Irma chuckled. I was a sweet mango in my day. Was I or was I not? You were, Maria agreed. I've seen the pictures, Nayeli said. That must have been a long time ago, mi hija, Tacho said, because lately... Nayeli kicked him under the table. Irma glared at him. I was the handsomest woman in Sinaloa, she continued, and Chavarin had the best mustache. He moved to Tijuana in 1963, did he not? He did. What did I do? I'll tell you what I did. I looked Chavarin up in the phone book. How many Chavarins do you imagine there are in any phone book? Not many. The gathered populace was amazed by Irma's brilliance. I called Chavarin. I went to his home, and when the time came, he drove me right across the line in his fine Lincoln town car. U.S. citizen, he said, and I said, U.S. city for sure, and they let us through. He told them I was his wife. Gasps. The audacity of Chavarin. That's it. You need connections to survive and cross that border. I have connections. She rose again. All their eyes followed her. I, she announced, raising her finger above her head like Fidel Castro, have sent a telegram to Chavarin in Tijuana. The destiny of these warriors is already assured. They clapped for her. They sighed and spoke among themselves. Maria took her hands in her own. She handed Nayeli a scrap of paper with the outdated telephone number, LIB 477. Libertad, she noted portentously. Ooh, liberty, the aunties thought. Everything had taken on an air of revolutionary Mexico. You will see, Irma said. The Americanos are kind, friendly people, generous people. They have quaint customs. They aren't really, shall we say, sophisticated like we are. You can't drink the water. It will give you diarrhea. But it's very clean there. Good food. You'll see. She stopped and pointed at all the girls one by one. Your dead are buried here. You were each born here, and your umbilical cords are buried in this earth. This town has been here since time began. God himself came from Tres Camarones, and don't you ever forget it. When the Apaches rode down the coast, burning all the cities, they stopped here and ate mangoes and fresh pineapples. That crazy gringo general, Blackjack Pershing, came here looking for Pancho Villa. He danced with my Aunt Teresa in the plazuela. In the hurricane of 1958, Don Pancho Mena was carried out to sea by the wind, and he rode a dolphin back to shore. And I won't have some rude gangsters or some exodus of weak-kneed men looking for money ruin my hometown. They were in awe of Aunt Irma, which is the way she liked it. "Why do you think I run this town?" she asked. There was no need to answer. Nayeli stuffed her backpack with her change of jeans, her panties, her clean socks, and her blouses. Deodorant, tampons. She was packing lightly. She wore her best football tennis with white gym socks. Garcia Garcia had presented her with a paperback copy of Don Quixote, but she couldn't make sense of it and would end up leaving it on the bus. Then she pulled out Matt's card and paper-clipped Irma's Tijuana phone number to it and tucked it into her back pocket. Her weeping mother came in her room. "Are you taking your father's postcard?" she asked. "May I?" "You should." They stood together, looking at the picture of the paranoiac turkey in the cornfield. "I wish you could go there," Maria said, "to Kankakee. I wish you could bring him back." Nayeli took her hand. "If I can," she suddenly heard herself promising, "I will." "Oh, Nayeli!" Her mother threw her arms around her and sobbed. Aunt Irma made travel packs for each warrior. In big Ziploc bags, she put toothpaste, toothbrushes, small bars of hand soap, small bottles of shampoo, rolls of mint lifesavers, packets of matches, some band-aids, small packets of tissues. She gave each of them chocolates, M&Ms with peanuts, in case they got hungry. In Nayeli's bag was a small jar of Vicks VapoRub. "I know you get stuffy," she said. They were astonished when Tacho arrived at the bivouac. He had chopped his hair into spikes and oiled it up. Even worse, he had dyed it platinum blonde. Vampi ran her hands over the spikes. Tacho had a can of pepper spray tucked in his left sock, and his shirt said Queen on it. He smirked. Nobody in Camarones would ever get that joke. In spite of the alarming haircut, Garcia Garcia, not trusting mere girls to accomplish the mission, pressed $500 on Tacho. Tacho pinned the money inside his underpants in a velvet pouch. He had his savings, 600 more U.S. dollars, zipped inside his money belt. There was more to come. The town had taken up a collection, and they handed their savings over to the girls. The bank converted the pesos and coins into American greenbacks, giving Nayeli $1,256. Yolo Xochitl had $150 from her family and $65 in pin-tending money. La Vampi had $35. Tacho handed Nayeli $50 of his own. "It's your tips, mi hija." She split it with Vampi. Mothers and strangers gathered in front of the fallen hand. Irma's Cadillac settled on its springs as the travelers loaded the trunk. Vampi and Yolo hefted small shoulder bags onto their backs. Yolo had clothes and books stuffed in her school backpack. Tacho's duffel was large and heavy, stuffed with discotheque clothes. La Vampi hid a switchblade that El Quema Pueblos had once given her in her back pocket. Nayeli carried a tiny gift purse Tacho had given her. Bundles or tortillas were pressed on the travelers. A greasy paper bag of sweet rolls. Sensei Gray stepped forward and bowed deeply. He suddenly threw a punch at Nayeli. She blocked it and spun and laid her foot against his jaw. The master smiled and bowed again. Tears. Wails of sorrow. The four warriors waved bravely to the crowd. The girls kissed their mothers and grandmothers. Father Francois blessed them again. They got in the Cadillac. They slammed the doors. Aunt Irma honked the horn three times, drove around the plazuela a few times, waving out the window, and they were gone. Peppino climbed on the roof of the fallen hand, yelling, "Nayeli! Nayeli! Come back to Peppino, Nayeli!" Aunt Irma accompanied them into the Tres Estrellas bus terminal. Poor folks in straw hats shuffled around with paper bags tied with twine. Mothers fed their children beans from plastic containers they were carrying because they couldn't afford the food on the road. Electronic voices echoed off the cement floors. Irma bought their tickets. 4. One way to Tijuana. The ticket taker had seen this before. He smirked. "It's not what you think," she snapped at him. He shrugged. "I have no opinion," he said. She distributed the tickets, like playing cards, to her warriors. She bought them all cold sodas and bottles of water for the road. Vampi cadged a rock and roll magazine out of her. Yolo had a paperback book called Caballo de Troya 6. The cover announced, "Jesus Christ was a UFO pilot!" The huge bus loomed outside the window. Their driver was a dark-faced fat man named Chuy. His uniform was crisp, and he wore his bus pilot's cap at a jaunty angle. Chuy oversaw the loading of their bags into the bins under the bus. Then he positioned himself at the door to take tickets. He eyed the girls and Tacho. Tacho said, "¿Qué?" "Nada," Chuy replied. "Acul no más." He took Tacho's ticket. He looked at Irma, hovering about, fussing with the girl's hair. "I'll take care of them," he promised her. "No worries." He gestured for their tickets. Tacho hopped aboard and never looked back. "Remember," Irma said. "Call Chavarin immediately. Don't move one step without him." "All right," said Nayeli and started to board. Irma pulled her back. "Don't forget, former cops or soldiers." "Got it." "But," Irma said, "don't dawdle. In and out. And call me."
"I will."
"If there's any trouble, I'll fly there and meet you."
Nayeli stared.
"You'll come to Tijuana?" "Why not?" Nayeli was a bit put off by this revelation. Irma blushed, fiddled with her hair. "It depends," she said. Her face was bright carmine. Her eyes fluttered. "It depends, you know, on what Chava says." She laughed a tiny little laugh.
"Oh, my God," Nayeli thought. "She's in love." This was all some kind of bizarre dating service for Laosa.
"You'd better get going," Irma said.
"I intend to go get my father," Nayeli blurted.
It was a day of revelations. They stared at each other. Stalemate. "We'll see," Irma muttered.
Irma would have kissed Nayeli, but she couldn't get herself to lay her lips on Nayeli's cheek. She popped an air kiss beside her face and shoved her toward the steps. Chuy took her ticket. Irma gave Yolo a brief hug and pushed her toward the bus, too. Chuy took her ticket. Laosa smacked Vampi's bottom and said, "Crazy girl!" Chuy took her ticket and smiled. "Are you crazy?" he said.
"I am a vampire."
"Ay, Dios!" "Make me proud," Irma called, then hurried away before they could answer her. They found two rows of seats, four across, near the back of the bus. Yolo and Vampi sat on the left side of the bus. Nayeli and Tacho fought over the window on the right. They were all amazed that there was a bathroom at the back of the bus. Then they immediately started to flirt when a flushed American boy got on the bus. He was only going as far as Los Mochis, but that didn't stop them from working their magical stares, pouts, and blinks on him. La Vampi sighed a lot. Yolo looked stern, yet open to suggestion. Nayeli tried her most enigmatic smiles. Tacho ignored him completely. Chuy boarded and hit the microphone. "We are going to Tijuana, amigos. Via Culiacán, Los Mochis, Guaymas, San Luis, and Mexicali, with a few stops in between. If you think you're going to Guadalajara, get off now." He laughed. He shut the door. He turned on the air conditioning, which thrilled them all at first, then froze them until they burrowed under clothing and fell asleep to escape the chill. He released the brakes. They rolled into dusk. Chuy drove for precisely 41 minutes. He pulled off the highway. The bus tilted in the gloom as he drove it into an alley. "What the hell?" Tacho demanded. The American boy was asleep behind them. Voices were muttering, "Where is he going?" They brushed between bushes and banana trees. The bus rocked over potholes and ruts. Then Chuy pulled up behind a small house. "I'll be right back," he said. He opened the doors and hopped out. They craned at the windows to see what he was up to. The back door of the house opened and a woman appeared. Chuy took off his cap and gave her a ravishing kiss. They went inside and slammed the door. "Ah," somebody said, "his wife."
"Or his girlfriend,"
someone else replied. "He's having supper," another called out.
"Or his girlfriend."
They all laughed and waited. They were already an hour off schedule once Chuy sauntered back from his layover and bowed when the passengers applauded him. They drowsed through Culiacán, a rustling stop where peasants traded places with other peasants. They carried tin pots of hot beans for the road, tart goat cheese. Then Chuy sped to Los Mochis, announcing, "Los Mochis, Sinaloa, the most beautiful city in the world." The girls awoke and regretfully saw the American boy off the bus. He stepped into the moth-crazy night, bright in Chuy's lights against the whitewashed trunks of trees on the street. Dog barks and donkey brays entered with the hot air, sounding oddly dull and dusty.
"Now leaving Los Mochis," Chuy said, and slammed the door shut.
Psst! The brakes hissed. They rolled. They were deep asleep when the soldiers boarded. Nayeli was the first to awaken. She sensed the bus braking, the startling lurch as it dropped off the blacktop and stopped. She nudged Tacho awake.
"What?" he said, sitting up. "What?" Chuy was looking at them in the rearview mirror. He locked eyes with Nayeli and raised his eyebrows, shook his head slightly, making a small calming motion with his palms. Tacho poked Yolo, who snorted awake and elbowed Vampi. Chuy opened the doors. Everybody on the bus was awake now. A soldier with an M16 slung over his shoulder stepped aboard.
"Lights," he said.
Chuy clicked on the interior lights. Everybody was blinking, covering their eyes. A second soldier's head appeared behind the first's back, peering in at them from the steps. Nayeli saw soldiers standing around the bus, looking up at them in the windows. The first soldier entered, and the second, then a third. They filled the narrow passageway. They looked as young as Nayeli. They first stared at an old woman, alone in the right front row.
"Drugs?" he said.
"Ay, Dios, no!" she cried.
He nodded, but he was already looking beyond her. They came down the aisle, poking travelers with the barrels of their weapons.
"Mojados?"
the first soldier asked a small group of men in front of Nayeli and Tacho. Nayeli had never actually heard anybody called a wetback before.
"Only when we get to the other side," one of the men quipped.
"Oh?" the soldier said.
"We're Mexicans, from Jalisco."
He nodded, moved forward. He paused and looked at Nayeli. His eyes fell to her chest. He smiled a fraction of a smile, then turned his eyes to Tacho.
"You," he said, "what the fuck are you supposed to be?"
"Wetback," Tacho said, "when we get to the border."
"Where are you from?"
"Tres Camarones."
"Never heard of it."
The soldiers looked at each other and smirked again. The second soldier said,
"This one looks like he's carrying drugs."
"Marijuana?" the first said.
"No."
"Coca?"
"Hell no."
The soldier laid his rifle across the seat back in front of Tacho's face.
"When you leave Mexico," he said, "don't come back."
"Don't worry," Tacho said. "I'm on my way." What did he care? He'd never see this piece of crap again. But he knew better than to mouth off. They looked at Yolo and Vampi and were about to say something else when they caught sight of a couple huddled in the back of the bus.
"¿Y ustedes qué?" the first soldier demanded.
"Nada," the man said. "Vamos a Tijuana."
"De veras. ¿Para qué van?"
The man spread his hands.
"Trabajo,"
he said. The soldiers were jamming in at his seat. They kicked him.
"Ay,"
he said.
"You're illegal," the interrogator said.
"No."
"You snuck into Mexico, cabrón."
"No,"
the woman cried. "Por favor."
"We're Mexicans," the man said.
"You're foreigners."
"No."
Nayeli was shaking. Tacho put his hand on her forearm. He looked at the two girls across the aisle and mimicked looking forward with his eyes. The soldier smacked the man in the mouth. They were both crying.
"Where did you come from, cabrón?"
"Colombia,"
he admitted. Cursing, the soldiers dragged him from his seat. The woman was yelling. The second soldier grabbed her arm and twisted it behind her.
"It'll go better for you if you keep your mouth shut," he said.
The Colombians were dragged and bounced back down the aisle and shoved down the steps, and the soldier said, "Get out of here," to Chuy, who made the sign of the cross and shut the doors and started the engine and bounced the bus hard as he got back up on the road. Nayeli saw the palest ghosts in the night as the Colombians were tossed into a tan Humvee
and then were swallowed whole by dust and darkness, and were gone, as if it had all been a dream. Their little bags were still in the overhead bin. Nayeli caught Chewie's eyes in the mirror again. He shook his head. He shrugged. He turned off the interior lights. Gunshots awoke them before dawn. Tacho dove out of his seat and sprawled in the aisle. Chewie wove across the highway, and the big bus shuddered when he braked. They heard yelling, then three more shots in rapid succession. Pop, pop, pop. Everybody had heard guns go off. It could have been a rabbit hunt or a goat's execution for a barbacoa. But it was on the long, empty road. Vampi was on top of Yolo, and she whispered, "Is it bandidos?" Chewie was rolling slowly, peering out his side window, unsure about how he should respond to this ambush. Stop or speed away? Nayeli moved up there to the sideways bench beside his seat.
"Who are they?" she said.
"I don't know."
A pickup wobbled around behind them. Pop, pop. Men in cowboy hats waving their arms in the dark. Chewie decided. He put it in gear and sped up. The truck followed. Nayeli crouched behind him. Suddenly, the truck sped up and passed them. Pop, pop, pop. The men held up banners that read, "Pan." They hollered. They waved. They threw beer cans. They sped away. Chewie exhaled and slowed down.
"Jesus Christ," he said. "A political rally."
Nayeli started to laugh. So did he. "Are all your trips like this?" she said.
"Miss," he replied, "if you want to see the damnedest things in life, drive long-haul trips in Mexico."
By the time he had finished telling her stories of flaming car wrecks, armed bandits, UFOs, roadside devils chasing the bus, and the tragic story of Melesio, the driver who sneezed at the wheel and drove off a cliff, killing everyone but himself in the bus, the sun had come up. Chapter 9. A relief driver boarded the bus in Huila, Sonora. Chewie staggered to a small bunk behind the toilets and fell asleep. The last thing he said before starting to snooze was,
"30-minute break!"
The girls and Tacho stiffly made their way off the bus and stood, overcome, by the killing desert light. A melancholy little dog wagged its peg of a tail at them, and Tacho threw a rock at it at the same time that Vampi said, "He's so cute!" Alkaline dust moved through the flat white land like smoke. Far in the distance, a weak little dust devil whirled up and carried some scraps of paper over the sand to a rattling creosote bush. It dropped its small load of trash there as it fell apart. Immediately upon its demise, another rose and lurched away toward the far mountains that revealed themselves as a black clot of shadows on the horizon.
"Lovely," Tacho noted.
Nayeli clapped her hands together. "Come on, let's go. Let's have breakfast and freshen up." They trotted across the endless black two-lane, standing aside to allow a rusted fuel tanker to bellow past, its driver pulling the air horn chain about 20 times when he saw the girls.
"He could be honking at me, you know," Tacho said. "Dream on," Nayeli replied, marching forcefully into the tiny bus station and diner.
The toilets were caked in feces. Yolo almost threw up. The girls watched the door as each took her turn peeing in the sink. Tacho, in the men's room, was astonished to find no toilet at all, just a hole in the floor with a ghastly rind of brown stuccoed around its mouth.
"Oh, well," he said, and assumed the bombardier position. There was no toilet paper. He was forced to use the newsprint pages of a fan magazine that featured pictures of pop music bands. Inside the diner, a harried Mexican woman was negotiating for bus tickets to Mazatlan. There were three tables on a concrete floor. Passengers from the bus sat outside eating their own beans. They occasionally stepped in to buy a paper cup of coffee or a Coca-Cola. At one table, an immensely overweight boy sat, grunting and wheezing. Nayeli was fascinated by him. Fat welled up off his neck, and his breasts were so huge they ran around his sides and seemed to hold his arms away from his body. His eyes were lost in the folds. She thought he might be blind. His hair was so short that she could see his sweaty scalp shining in the neon lights. He had tiny ears that seemed perched on the neck fat, and he turned his head toward the sound of the woman's voice and made little fluty noises at her. She was apparently his mother. Tacho ordered arroz con pollo. The girls all chose simple fried eggs and tortillas. Coffee all around. The fat boy picked up the sugar dispenser. It was glass with a slanted chrome top. Nayeli nudged Yolo, who glanced over. The boy tipped the sugar into his fist, put his head back, and poured the white crystals in his mouth. His mother walked over and gently took the sugar from him. He kicked his feet and squirmed. She whispered to him. He got up reluctantly and trudged toward the door. "Life," the mother said to them as she passed, "does not get simpler." "Yes, ma'am," Nayeli said. Their meal came on paper plates. Tacho's food was watery and gray. "Yum, yum," quipped Yolo, whose eggs didn't look too bad. How could you ruin eggs? Tacho pushed at the rice with his plastic fork. There were two or three little dark blobs in there. He said, "I've never seen raisins in chicken and rice before."
"Tachito," Nayeli said, "those aren't raisins." "Oh, my God," Vampi cried. "Tacho's raisins have legs."
"Arroz con cucarachas," Tacho said. He raised his hands and looked at the cook.
"¿Qué?"
she said. "I give up," Tacho announced. "I really do."
"I'm not that hungry," Nayeli said.
"Me neither," said Yolo. Vampi was scooping up eggs with her tortilla.
"Why not?" she said.
When she was done, they threw their plates in the garbage bin and took their coffees outside and stood with the other pilgrims in the shadeless heat. It felt like the bus was standing still, and a dun blanket was being pulled past them, occasionally snagged up with bushes or a battered gas station. Suddenly, there would be an excitement of desiccated mountains, raw peaks exploding out of the hard pan, and falling away again. The girls slept. Tacho had startled them all by pulling a radio out of his duffel bag. He was slumped in the seat, chewing gum like a cheerleader, his antenna extended, and the tinny voice of a Mexican talk radio host buzzing like a wasp from the speaker. "What do we do about the Guatemalans? Have you seen the Salvadorans? Por favor, keep them out. Call me now and offer your opinion." Nayeli had made her way up front again, and she sat behind the new driver, looking out at the skeleton of the world. "Look at that," he said. Green highway patrol vehicles were parked at angles beside the highway. Rescuers were prying open a charred vehicle that sat in a wide circle of ashes. "Look at that!" An Indian woman ran along the highway,
holding a triangular piece of cardboard over a baby's face to protect it from the sun.
Look at that!
Crumpled wrecks of cars far down ravines. Nayeli never saw water anywhere. Riverbeds and stream beds looked like long lines of baby powder to her, buzzards circling slowly above them.
Look at that, the driver said.
A raven raced them. Nayeli watched the cattle become more emaciated and spindly. They stood in the sun as if they'd already been slaughtered, as if they were being barbecued down to charcoal and just didn't know it. They lost their color, went from the reds and creams she knew in Sinaloa to dull brown and dusty black. They hung their heads and nuzzled awful bony weeds and cactuses. Their ribs showed. The farther north they drove, the more pronounced the cages. Soon the cows looked like old rugs thrown over wood piles.
That's sad, she finally said.
What is? Said the driver over his shoulder.
How they suffer.
Who?
The cows out here.
What cows?
Those cows.
Those there?
Yes, the cows. They hardly look like they have enough meat on them to eat. They must be too dry for milk.
What cows? He said.
Those cows, she said.
Where?
Nayeli pointed.
There, everywhere.
Oh, those? He laughed. Those aren't cows, he said.
Excuse me?
Things must really be sad down south where you come from, the driver said. The animals must be midgets.
What?
Darling, those aren't cows. Those are northern rabbits.
He laughed and slapped the steering wheel and winked at her in the mirror and whistled the opening notes of Cumbia Lunera. The Aduana station outside of San Luis was squat and ugly in the setting sun. Chuy woke up and came forward. He rubbed his eyes as they pulled in.
Don't say anything to these cabrones, he told Nayeli. Tell your girls to shut up. Be invisible. They usually hit people for bribes going south, but they're watching for anything they can get. If you have marijuana, you'd better get rid of it.
He slapped the back of her seat twice and bounded down the steps, calling out to a uniformed Mexican customs official, "Mi capitán!" He laughed too loud and slapped the captain on the back.
Great, Yolo said. It'll be a miracle if we survive traveling through our own country.
Nayeli said, "Did you know it would be like this?" Tacho completed her thought.
I'm not worried about the Unaites anymore.
They laughed nervously.
When we get back, Nayeli said, we have to tell them what it's like up here.
Yolo was already secretly planning her memoir. Perhaps Garcia Garcia would finance a small first printing. The aduana officers waved them all off the bus and pointed at the station.
Single file, the captain said.
Chuy and the relief driver were getting all the bags out from under the bus. Young federales in aviator shades and members-only jackets lounged outside and laughed. As Nayeli walked inside, one of them murmured,
Buenota.
Its implication was very good to have sex with. She kept her eyes cast down and stepped into the smelly room. It was painted in two faded tones. The bottoms of the walls were green, and the tops were dirty yellow. Desks sat in the corners and scattered aluminum kitchen chairs lined one wall. A fan turned slowly over their heads. Two long metal counters cut across the room,
and bags stood open upon them.
Drogas?
No. Each traveler went through the same little charade.
Drogas?
No.
Contrabando?
No, nunca.
Foreigner?
Mexican, señor. A cop sat in a corner, eating a sandwich. He was laughing into a cell phone.
Orale, pues, güey,
he said to his best friend, and snapped the phone shut. He watched Tacho.
Mira nomás, he said.
He pointed at Tacho, and several of his cohorts went to his desk and whispered. They laughed. They turned and stared at him. Tacho could feel the tension in his jawbones. He started to grind his teeth. He didn't mean to, but it just started to happen. Nayeli dawdled, backing up to him. He shoved her with his shoulder. Move on, mija, he said. I'm all right. But of course he wasn't. The cop stood, crumpled the wrapper of his sandwich, and tossed a long shot into a trash can.
3 points, he noted.
His cohorts laughed and patted him on the back. He's the big star, Nayeli whispered to Yolo. You can tell. He's the jefe.
You, he said.
He was staring right at Tacho.
Me? Tacho said.
Me? The jefe repeated. The cops laughed.
You're a drug addict.
No, I'm not.
You're on cocaine right now.
I am not. The cop walked over to him. Tacho could smell the Cholula hot sauce and ham on his breath. That and a liberal spritzing of Axe. Nayeli and the girl stood frozen, looking down, but watching. The cop walked around Tacho.
Where are the drugs?
I told you, sir, there are no drugs.
Oh, really?
He put his hand on Tacho's back. Tacho jumped like a nervous pony.
Are you scared of something? The cop asked.
No.
Liar.
He gripped Tacho's upper arm.
Are you a male prostitute?
No.
But you are a faggot.
Tacho coughed. Everybody watched him.
It's all right. We're all amigos here, the cop said. It's all right with us if you're a faggot. Mexico is a free country.
He squeezed.
Faggot.
Then, the most shameful moment in Tacho's life happened right in front of Nayeli, Yolo, and Vampi. A single tear rolled down his cheek. He cleared his throat. I am not a faggot.
What?
I am not. Nayeli turned around.
He is my boyfriend.
Yes, said Yolo. We're going to Tijuana for their wedding. The cop eyed them skeptically. He smiled. She was cute, the little dark one. Too dark for his taste, but she had some good ass on her.
Very good, he said. Very smart.
He tapped his head with one finger. She flushed.
What's your name? He demanded.
Nayeli, she replied.
He nodded.
Should I search you, Nayeli? He said. Are you carrying some of the good Sinaloan marijuana?
No.
He laughed. And you? He jerked Tacho off balance.
What is your name, bridegroom?
Tacho.
Tacho.
Just Tacho.
Tacho no es muy macho,
the jefe called out, and his pals chuckled. I've heard that joke before, Tacho said.
Are you upset?
The jefe asked him.
You're crying, Tachito. That doesn't seem very macho to me.
He looked at Nayeli. "I just want a word with the groom," he said. He dragged Tacho toward the back of the room.
"Tacho!"
Nayeli cried. One of the kinder Aduana agents said, "It is better if you stay quiet." The jefe murmured in Tacho's ear, "Do you have drugs stuck up your ass, Tachito?" He slammed Tacho through a door, and they were suddenly in the men's toilet. The jefe shut the door and locked it. Tacho wiped his eyes and stood firm. The cop smiled at him. "Faggot." The cop bumped into him.
"Oh," he said, "what was that?"
"What?"
"You bumped into me."
"I did not."
"Oh," the jefe said, "so I am a liar?"
"No."
"No what?"
"No, sir."
"I am not a liar, then."
"No."
"So you bumped into me?"
Tacho stared at the wall. There were ancient hieroglyphs of pudenda and violence drawn on every surface.
"See, if you say so."
"You dirty little faggot," the cop said.
"Do you think you can work your little tricks on me? Rubbing on me like that?"
"No, sir."
"Apologize."
"I'm sorry."
The cop grabbed Tacho's crotch and squeezed it. Tacho yelped. "Is this your game?"
Tacho said, "Please."
"Nice big packet. Were you hoping to use it on me, Tacho?"
The cop hit him once, knocking him against the wall. He turned to the sink and washed his hands.
"You make me sick," he said. "Get out of here."
Tacho picked himself up and struggled for a moment with the latch. He hurried out of the bathroom. Everybody stopped what they were doing and stared at him. "A slight misunderstanding," he said, and hurried to the bus and folded up in the dark and feigned being asleep. El Jefe stood in the doorway with his hands in his pockets.
"All clear," he said. "Let them go."
The passengers headed for the door.
"Nayeli," the jefe called. "Come back to see me soon."
His men laughed. 20 miles outside of Mexicali, the hydraulic system broke on the bus, and they rolled back.